An ensemble of inspiring young singers visits Portage tonight. The African Children's Choir will perform at 6:30 p.m. tonight and tomorrow at 7 p.m. at St. Michael's Church in Portage. Tina Sipp is the choir manager, who has been with the African Children's Choir for a number of years. I asked her about the scope of the tour and how it works.
Generally, it's local churches that will host us, and they will provide the venue. And amazingly, they provide host families who take care of all of the food and the lodging for the children and the adult chaperones who tour with the children as their volunteers. They come out for the duration of the tour, and they're really the family on the road for the children. And so we have 7 or 8 chaperones that travel with the children. They do the schooling, they run the concerts, and then, of course, we have 2 African chaperones from the country where the children are from. They were former members of the choir when they were children, and so they are there kind of as the cultural guides for the children while they tour, and just keeping them, we're trying to keep them as culturally intact as we can, because they will be going back to Africa and hopefully making their influence there. And so we have this team of chaperones. So the host families would have 1 chaperone and then 2 to 3 children.
Could I hear a little more about your story? How did your life intersect with the African Children's Choir?
Yeah, a fun story to think back on now. I've been with them for 14 years, and but 12 years before that, in the early 90s, I was working in campus ministry at a large state university in Washington State, and a student that was in our ministry group took me to my first concert. She'd heard about it, and we went, and I was completely, totally mesmerized by the children. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But it was actually 12 years later that I whenever they would come into the area, I would go and see them. And I just had the same response every time. There was something very magnetic about the children. And so the third time, I was nearing the end of that particular season of my life, and I got on the phone the next day and said, what does it take to be an auntie? And so they mapped out the process, and I got right on it. And about a year and a half later, 2003, I was out on the road, and I've been with them ever since. So I did a couple of tours. I toured for about 2 years, different choirs, and then did some booking for them for 10 and a half years, and then became the choir manager just about 2 years ago. So I've been around the choir for a while, but it was a concert. It was just a concert. I was completely taken with the children and thought if and when I ever left my other position, that this would be the thing I'd want to do. And there's something very profound. I don't feel like a lot of jobs necessarily make me feel like I'm doing something profound, but this really does. And what we're doing is we're dramatically changing the trajectory of thousands of lives. These children without education really don't have a hope of breaking out of the cycle of poverty. But with an education, the opportunities for them really blow wide open. And so the work that we're doing is we're trying to really enable these children to get a wonderful education so that they can become change makers for their communities, cities, countries, continents. And just like any of our countries that have, we all have our challenges, we are trying to raise up this generation of African children to become those adults who will make those necessary changes in their own communities. And so it's no small target that we're trying to hit. It's a beautiful target, and we really believe it comes through investing in these children today so that they can help Africa tomorrow. So it's a wonderful thing to be a part of. It's not hard to get up and do my job. I find it very meaningful, and whatever I can do to create a climate on our tours for their development in every area, emotionally, relationally, spiritually, educationally, physically, that's my job, is to create a wonderful climate for these children to grow and thrive and develop while we have them out here on tour. And then we send them back home to a wonderful school where they will now receive an education through post-secondary level once they were a choir child. And so tour is just the launching pad for the rest of their life with the African Children's Choir. They're a part of the family forever.
What is preventing children from poor families from getting an education in the children's choir is coming from Uganda. What is preventing them from getting a public education there?
There is government-funded education, but they require a uniform, and the children need to provide their own pencils and paper. And the families that we're dealing with, those costs are beyond their means. So even a government school is not necessarily completely accessible to all of these children because of the cost involved. And so a child might get one term of three in a school year. They might get a couple of terms, but it's not a guarantee that they will be able to have a consistent education year to year because of the financial situation of these families. And then if you go to a private school, that the fees there are even more. So, and most people want to go to a private funded school. I think the perception is that those are better schools, and those are just really out of the realm of possibility for the families that we're working with. So without assistance, that, yeah, it's just not a given, as it is here in the West. So it's a huge wall for them. It's a huge obstacle.
Tell me more about the parent organization. This is a nonprofit charity, I believe?
Correct. It's called Music for Life. That's our umbrella organization, and underneath that umbrella we have relief and development works. For instance, we did a number of, we've raised quite a lot of funds for child-led families in these AIDS areas in South Africa. That was one of our works. Then we have the choir, which is our primary fundraising arm for the organization. And then we have educational programs. And so we have 35 different education programs over the seven countries where we work. So really the work of the choir, the funding that is raised from the choir, goes to supporting these 35 different education programs. And there's several thousand children that are represented within those 35 programs. Again, that's, I would say, kind of, if you will, kind of our bread and butter. We're really focusing in on the educational piece because really that's the greatest perceived need, second to food probably, in the countries where we're working. Everyone wants to get their children educated.
When was Music for Life established? Is this a long-running, experienced operation?
Yes, we're the original traveling children's choir. We're the very first traveling children's choir. And we're celebrating 33 years this year. And we have educated over 52,000 children in our history. And we have over 1,000 former choir members now. And it started really with the vision of one man. Ray Barnett was our founder. He was doing work with the persecuted church. He was in Uganda when Idi Amin was killing Christians and persecuting the church. Thousands of children were left orphaned. And on one of his trips, he was asked to give a ride to a little boy from one village to another. And in the Jeep, the little boy sang praise songs the whole way. And the little boy had lost his parents in the Civil War. And Ray was completely taken by the joy in spite of the circumstances of this little boy. And he said, you know, if the West could just see the potential and the beauty and the dignity of these children, they would want to help. And so that's when that little boy is what inspired the choir. And Daddy Ray said, you know, if we could get a group of children out to sing in the West, they would want to help. And so in 1984, the first choir came out and toured, I believe, on the West Coast. I don't know exactly their whole route. I mean, it was very, you know, just kind of like, let's give this a try. And they got into some churches and then more churches. And so some of those children from that very choir, choir number one, are still, we know where they all are. They're still attached to the family, but some of them are, one of them built a school for us. We've had a number of them, one's now a doctor, was trained in England. So there's just some wonderful stories from that original choir. But that's where it got its start. Daddy Ray he's a visionary. He has compassion for all people that are in need. and he just couldn't sit on his couch. He had to do something, and he's made quite a significant impact in thousands of lives.
Now, since you've been involved with this organization for 14 years, I'd like to hear any stories you have to tell about being on the road and working with and assisting these young children, fish out of water, away from their home, get around and meet complete strangers in strange places.
Yeah, you know, I think it's unique. The African child is much different than your average Western child. They're used to being raised by many other people besides their immediate family. Mm-hmm. And it's really true that saying, you know, it takes a village. The children of Africa, they're used to having a number of adult people have authority in their lives, and their respect for authority is quite different. And so there's some pieces that are in place in Africa that are not in the West, and they're just different. And so the idea of them being raised by people other than their immediate nuclear family is the norm. It's not abnormal. And so meeting all of these people is just like meeting a bunch of new aunties and uncles. That's kind of how they see it. And so their family just extends, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they also are very... I think the best lesson I receive from the children is to live the day that you're living. I didn't realize I lived so much in the past and the future, and, you know, maybe regrets or, you know, planning for something coming up. They don't have that luxury. The past, they don't have to get food for yesterday, so that there's no reason to think about the past. And tomorrow is not a guarantee. In their mind, their mindset is where we might have a 5, a 10, a 20-year plan and retirement and insurance and all of these things. That African child, and in the African culture, tomorrow is not a guarantee. Death is really just around the corner, and they live much more in the reality of that. So today is the day that you live. And I will forever be thankful for them teaching me that lesson. They just wring the joy out of the day that they're living. They don't get as attached in the same way. You know, the host families are putting them on the bus crying and tearing up. You know, they don't want to say goodbye yet. And the children are just like, you know, it's a new day. We had a wonderful time here. We loved it, and it's pure, and it's true, and it's honest, but today's today. And they just get on the bus, and they, you know, they read their books, and they laugh, and they take a nap, and it's a new day. So it's wonderful. It's refreshing. And to be honest, I would say from my own experience, I think what people connect with the children is what we long for. I think that's why they're magnetic, because of the pure joy, the pure hope. There's something that the children possess that in our deepest soul we also long for, and it's an echo of heaven in a way. We see it in this very disarming, beautiful child that we know, whose background is not maybe the easiest, or, you know, not what we would hope for. And in spite of all that, they have this infectious joy and hope, and it resonates with people. People connect to that, and they're a beautiful messenger of that, because they don't have any agenda. And so we can receive it from them in a very unobtrusive way. It's beautiful. And so I think how I've been influenced by the children is through these things, you know, the joy of the day, the purity of their hope in spite of circumstance. And, one story I love to relate is to one of the little girls that I traveled with. She was not necessarily one of our top academic students on the road, but when she got home, she lost her mom shortly after she returned from tour. And she realized at that point that her younger siblings would rely on her for their education, and she decided to dedicate herself to her education. She skyrocketed to the top of her class. She became the second-ranked student in the entire country of Rwanda. She's now been selected one of 40 students in East Africa to be a part of a special gap year program to train and to prepare for university. Not only is she brilliant academically, but the children, the students, when they're in secondary school, are given a small amount of monthly money to cover their transportation and toiletries and the things that they need. She saved all of that, and she put electricity in her grandmother's house so that her grandmother would have lighting, and when she would come home on breaks, she could continue to study. To me, that's heart and head. She wasn't just brilliant in school. She gets why we're doing what we're doing. The whole idea behind this, and the other thing from the children's point of view, is they already know that by getting this education, the motivation for them is they will get to provide for their family. And you tell me any Western child who's in third, fourth, or fifth grade who is working hard so that they can help their family. And I think when people get that connection, again, the children, the beauty of the children, the dignity of the children just explodes. They're doing this for their family, and they get that at such an early age. And so this little gal, her name is Francoise, she just, to me, that's a capstone story of what we are trying to accomplish in the lives of these children, to educate them so that they will bless those around them and make a difference. So,
okay. So, Tina, there's a program tonight and tomorrow. It's at St. Michael's Church in Portage. The African Children's Choir will take the stage and do what? What can we expect?
Right. The program is very engaging. It's very inspiring. It's very energetic. There is a beautiful combination of music, including old gospel inspirational favorites such as This Little Light of Mine, He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, as well as contemporary Christian praise music, and then a nice sampling of ethnic worship music. The children actually sing in probably three or four second languages during their program. And so there's a number of African dialects that they sing in, and they sing a cappella to their African drums, the children drum. And also, one of our former choir members has designed all of the costumes. There's three different beautiful traditional costumes, and the children will also do a dance from the country that they represent. And so it's a very bright, colorful, energetic, engaging program, and I don't think there's anyone that's ever been sorry that they've gone to see the children perform. It's very inspiring and very moving.
Will there be any difference between tonight's program and tomorrow night's program, which is a different time? Tonight is 6:30 and tomorrow is 7 p.m. Is it a continuation, or will the same program be presented?
It will be the same program. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are two chances to see it. Is it a ticketed event?
No tickets are required, but we do take a love offering, and so we would encourage people to come ready to invest in the children and their future. And so, yes, we'll take a love offering during the course of the program, and I would encourage people to give generously.
And referring back to what you said at the beginning of the interview, that these children come from families who can't put forward the price of books and pencils and a pencil case and a school outfit, items which for most of us would take up a very small part of our budget. These kind of expenses really are make or break for these children's families?
Yeah, you know, the families that we're working with, honestly, Kara, you know, if they're getting one meal a day on the table, they're doing pretty good. It's extreme poverty. It's extreme poverty. It's third world. And so there are tens of thousands of children that cannot get an education. That is the truth. And it is primarily due to the financial means of a family.
Well, Tina, it was really a pleasure to talk to you and learn more about the African Children's Choir and Music for Life International.
Thank you so much. And we also have other ways that people can get involved beyond a concert. They can become sponsors of specific children. They can become friend of the choir, which is just a monthly donation. And then also, we're always looking for volunteers to come out and tour with the children as their family on the road. So there'll be an announcement made during the concert, and we'll have a table in the foyer with our tour leader who's with the choir. And they have all the information for all of those programs and volunteering.